All right, welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walden with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I appreciate everyone who is subscribing to the RSP Cast and who've been rating and reviewing it. Always appreciate the feedback. Today, we're having a repeat guest who came on about a month ago to talk about the craft of running routes, and that is Mr. Drew Lieberman from the Sideline Hustle. Drew is a works with wide receivers. He has worked at a variety of programs, including as a wide receivers coach at Wesleyan. He was a quarterback at Wesleyan University and also worked at Rutgers, working with none other than Ralph Regan, the former national championship coach at Georgia Tech back around here in my parts. So, Drew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. It's a pleasure to be back on.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. We certainly, you know, our listeners certainly enjoyed our conversation about wide receiver play. And I thought it would be fun, you know, after we had that show to have you back on to talk a little bit more about wide receivers and focus on the act of catching the football, because we focused last time really on the art of route running and releases. And so what are some things, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that people, when we think about catching the ball, you know, even before we get to that, there is kind of a craft to earning position to even just catch the ball. What are some things that fans should be noting when they're watching wide receivers, and what separates the good ones from the pack when it comes to just getting in a position to catch a football?
Well, I think a big thing is it when it comes to getting in position to catch a football, it's very similar to like boxing somebody out in basketball and like trying to get a rebound. Like, you want to try to run your route in a way that you can get your body between the ball and the defender, and kind of use your body as a shield in a way. And if you do that, two things happen. A, obviously you have the clearest access to the football. But also, by doing that, when the DB tries to play the ball, he often has to go through you to get to the ball, which is a good way to you know, kind of create contact and draw a flag at times if you can't catch the ball cleanly. So I think body position is a big thing, and that really comes from, you know, like that is part of like kind of positioning yourself to catch the football is really a part of route running in my eyes, because it has a lot to do with body control at the top of your route. Your ability to be very specific with how you come out at different angles, depending on how the DB is playing you. But definitely having your body in front of his, you know, and then it varies from there, from whether the quarterback is on target or not. Like, you have to be nimble, to be able to adjust to, you know, any sort of inaccuracy and make the quarterback look good and make him right. And we're always like, one of the most amazing stats about Chad Johnson when he was playing was, they used to say that his range to catch a football, like because of his quickness and his suddenness and his length, was like, if you put him in the middle of a school bus, he'd be able to catch a ball and throw it on either end of a school bus. He could go catch the ball in like one step or something like that. Something crazy.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a big part of it as well.
Yeah. And one of the things you mentioned was suddenness. And I think part of that too is just as we kind of veer back into route running, maybe slightly here, is just getting that head around quickly on a lot of routes and just snap as you snap that turn into your break, getting your head around to locate the ball. And I think that's something that you often see when receivers are maybe thinking a little too much or not sure what they're doing, their head comes around slow.
Yeah. And that's a fine line. That's definitely a big part of it. But what you'll also see on the flip side of that with inexperienced receivers is their head comes around too early, because they're so conscious of trying to catch the football and they get a little anxious. And one thing, like a buzzword I always coach with is the last thing out of your break is your eyes, meaning that you have to finish with your feet first, like finish the break with your feet, make sure whatever the break point is, you're running it fully, and then snap your head and eyes around. And it's one of the harder things to coach, because it really is a fine line where, you know, you can't be too conscious of keeping your head down and running your break and then the ball's hitting you in the face, which I see a lot. But then at the same time, when kids or young players get anxious, they're turning their eyes before they're finished with their break, and then they're coming out of their break slow. Or a lot of times when you see people fall or slip at the top of the route, watch their route again, like in slow motion, and you'll see their eyes coming first. And that's how their feet kind of get outside their framework, because their head's going one way while their feet are going the other way. And that's what creates a lot of people falling at the top. So it's a very fine line to coach there.
It's funny because I'm always a big proponent of how in sync the eyes and the feet need to be, especially yeah. with running back and quarterback play. But it, you know, it obviously applies to wide receiver play as well, is that the feet tell you, I always kind of say it with quarterback and running back, that the feet tell you what the eyes are processing.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it can't, that is interesting that it can't be too far ahead. So another, you know, another thing that kind of came to mind to me was, as you were talking about earning position, is looking at, you know, certain types of routes where, you know, you want to earn a certain type of position. And also then maybe it comes to the attack of the football. And, you know, what are some tenets that fans should be looking for when it comes to attacking the football, you know, depending on, you know, obviously where the ball is located, you know, dictates a lot of that. But what are some of those things based on those ranges?
Yeah. So anything that's not like a vertical route, like obviously a go route, a post, a corner, anything down the field, but anything that is like an intermediate, like in breaking route, out breaking route, or like a curl comeback. I talk about wanting to finish friendly and finish at a negative angle, which means like run your route and then finish downhill towards the quarterback. And I think that that's a big thing. That's coached a lot at from the high school to college levels to help and just is kind of emphasizes being aggressive, attacking the football, because you never want to fade away from the ball. And because that's how, you know, even if you run a great route, then you're not aggressive going to attack the ball at the top of the route. You know, that's how a DB can kind of catch up and undercut it and make a play. But what's interesting about that is that's something that's kind of taught universally, is finish friendly. You know, if you're running a speed out at 10 yards, like you want to finish your break and then break around, you know, 10 to 12 yards and then finish downhill at a negative angle coming back to the ball. But an interesting thing, I was training Leonte Carew, who is now in the Dolphins practice squad this summer, and he's a kid I coached at Rutgers. And he was telling me how with the Dolphins, Adam Gase doesn't want their receivers to finish at a negative angle or finish friendly, because his theory is, you know, you're playing in the NFL. Like, you shouldn't have to finish downhill. The quarterbacks are so good, the ball should be on you. I don't want you losing any yards in your route. So I don't want you finishing downhill. And I'd never heard that before, but it makes a lot of sense at that level that, you know, you don't need to help the quarterbacks out quite as much when you're playing with one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league or in the world, presumably. So that was a very interesting kind of nuance there. It was a day I was working out with Tim Wright, who was most recently on the Chiefs. Has played tight end and kind of slot receiver in the NFL for 7 years. And he's played in the league for 7 years and never been anywhere where they coach that. But it's something that Adam Gase does not want them finishing downhill, which I thought was very interesting.
I find that interesting as well, because I mean, I certainly think of several examples where in the NFL where there were critical throws where you needed to finish negatively. but I mean, certainly, I guess that depends on, you know, who your quarterback is and your theory, and, you know, and I'm sure that they probably, you know, he's probably done enough quality control work to look at maybe his situation or situations that he's been in maybe in the past and thinks that there's something to that. So, everyone has an interesting situation with that. Now, what about routes like fade routes? Because the other night in the opener last week, Julio Jones ran a fade route to the left side, you know, facing the quarterback. And he went up for the ball and he leaned really far back for the catch. And, you know, I posted, and I may be really wrong about this, that's why I wanted to ask you about it, is I saw him lean back on that route. I mean, just like jump backwards. And I thought he had enough room to just kind of jump straight up and down to get that ball. And you could see that even by where the ball hit his hands, where he was leaning back. And I thought him leaning back like that, trying to lean into the defender and maybe either cause an interference penalty or to just make sure that he was, you know, kind of bumping the man out of the way, maybe, you know, maybe that was what his tact was in terms of what he was trying to do. But it seemed like doing that forced him into a position where he couldn't stay in bounds.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. It's one of the hardest things to do is going up to get the jump ball. It's something I coach a lot. I think it's something that is harder than it looks for someone who's not in the act of doing that, like a coach or even like a fan or scout watching. But it's big. Like when the ball's in the air, anytime it's underthrown at all, anytime it's not something where you have to sprint to get underneath it, you do want to try to stick your foot in the ground and jump straight vertically or even back towards the DB for a couple reasons. A, to just be more like, that's just part of being more aggressive and attacking the ball. And obviously if your momentum is going away from the ball, it gives the DB more time to kind of recover and make a play on it. But also kind of like you hinted at is if a ball's underthrown, you know, you want to try to create the contact of jumping through the DB, because a lot of times he doesn't have vision on the ball. He's running towards you and he'll have to run through you to make a play, and that should draw a flag. And a lot of times if it's like, you know, a 50-50 kind of competitive ball, the ref's not going to bail you out with the flag unless it looks like you're out competing the DB for it. If you're fading away and the DB's being physical and he makes a play on it, he's going to, you know, give that guy the benefit of the doubt. But if you're really jumping up and through the defender to try and catch the football, that's when you'll draw a flag. But that's also, more importantly, what gives you just a chance to be more competitive with the ball in the air. And I didn't see that exact play with a guy like Julio Jones. That tactic is definitely hardest for bigger receivers. And obviously Julio is an unbelievable athlete, but he's a huge guy. So he's got more momentum and just more weight going the opposite way. And it's something that's just, it's not easy, and you have to have great body control. It also is something you have to be conscious of. I don't think it's something that really ever becomes second nature. I think it's something you have to coach over and over. It's got to be preached in practice over and over. And I think that it actually has to go through the receiver's mind for a split second, because they've heard it in practice so often. I need to jump through the defender. I don't think it's ever really anything that is natural. Whereas like route running, a lot of times, and your break points, that does become second nature where you don't have to think about it. From my experience, jumping up and through the defender to attack the ball in the air is something that's conscious, that needs to be trained over and over.
Gotcha. And that's an interesting perspective on that. You mentioned that it takes a lot of practice to be able to do, and I'm sure that some angry Falcons fans will probably say, well, he hasn't had enough practice over the past couple of years in the red zone to really hone that. Certainly that you could see how the degree of difficulty on that play would exist. So when it comes to just using your hands to catch the ball, I mean, I've often described catching the ball, the difference between using your fingertips and your palms is, you know, I don't know the scientific terms for physics in terms of how it, you know, helps stop the spin of the ball, but I've just over the years of watching, I've always noticed that it just seems from a biomechanical standpoint, when you can get 8 to 10 fingertips on a football, that controls the spin much faster and much more efficiently than the ball striking your palm. Because when you have that kind of kickback of the ball striking your palm, it's a more violent kickback, and it causes, you know, a more violent situation where you have to try and make a second catch attempt, and the ball's going to be moving at a faster rate on the rebound. Whereas with fingertips, if you don't catch it with your fingertips and it doesn't control that, the spin as well, the ball tends to fall gentler, and it makes it a little bit easier to get a second chance opportunity as opposed to striking your palm or hitting your chest in ways that where some players trap that. I was wondering if you could, you know, comment on that and talk about, you know, the technique of using your hands and fingertips to catch the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's well said with the fingertips. But even before that, preceding anything, even catching, before the ball even gets to your fingertips, your eye discipline is the most important thing about catching a football. And that's how you become precise, catching it with your fingertips and not your palms, because you've trained your eyes so precisely. And it's the biggest thing I coach in catching a football. Like everybody instinctually, whether you're throwing it to your mother or your sister or, you know, an all pro football player, like instinctually everyone has good enough hands to catch a ball or catch a moving object coming at them. But what really, I think, separates people who have great hands is having great eyes and great eye discipline and able to track the ball really, really precisely so that you can see it. You know, you can see a finer point of the ball. You know, a term I use all the time is to see the X of the football. Like if you see a still, yes, football, you know, the point of it forms an X, and you really want to try and focus on the small target. And by having that eye discipline, and that is something that does become second nature, where, you know, you instinctually are focused so locked into the football, that's where you can position your hands perfectly to catch it with your fingertips. And what I say, squeeze the fat of the ball with your fingertips. But, you know, like similarly, like you'll hear quarterback coaches say all the time when quarterbacks are warming up that, you know, you should target every ball with your eyes. Like you're never just playing catch. You're always working and practicing accuracy. And it's the same thing for receivers playing catch, where, you want to focus on your eyes and train your eyes and your fingertips every time you're playing catch, and you can't get enough work at that. And a big thing I do a lot, which I actually got from Julio Jones on a YouTube video, is I use tennis balls a lot to train eyes, because that is a smaller target. And similarly, if you try and catch a fast moving tennis ball with your palm, it's going to bounce out of your hand almost every time. So I think tennis balls are a great tool to train your eyes and force you to emphasize catching with your fingertips. And we have this drill that I got from Julio online where we catch six balls at a time. So I'll throw three balls in one hand, three balls in the other. And when you have, you know, two balls in a hand and you only have two fingers left to catch the ball, you have to be so specific and so precise with your eyes that it's one of the best training tools that I've seen to really train your eyes. And then, you know, the next step of that is catching the ball from all different angles, because, you know, something I say all the time, like when you see receivers catch the ball with their pads, not only is it hard to trap the ball with your pads, but the biggest reason why that's such a negative is you're letting the ball cross your eyes. Like your eyes don't work fast enough to track the ball all the way in when you're letting it get into your body like that. Or when you see a guy who doesn't have his hands out in front, you know, with a ball across the middle and he's kind of basket catching it when he should be flipping his hands and catching it in front of his eyes, you're letting the ball cross your eyes. And it's just like hitting a baseball, like catching a football in that way. It's just like hitting a baseball, where if you're up at bat and you don't swing till the ball crosses your eyes, it's going to be strike three. And that's the same way that guys really drop balls, is they're kind of complacent or lazy with their hands or just not aggressive enough. And the ball crosses their eyes, and that's how drops are created. But then from there, absolutely. Like, I just think the eyes are more important than even fingertips, because that precedes any ability you have to catch the ball with your fingertips, is seeing it with your eyes. And then you just have to train. Like, grip strength is a big thing. Like, I know a lot of my receivers at Wesleyan the last 2 years, that when they would drop a ball, they would punish themselves with 25 fingertip pushups. And they really thought that helped them, because they do pushups on their fingertips, and that just improved grip strength, improved their hand strength. And I think those things are very important. But, you know, like I said, you have to be really precise with your eyes to make sure you're catching it with your fingertips every time and not letting it get into your palm.
Those are terrific insights. And it's funny, I think about, I mean, obviously I was no football player, but I played a lot just for fun. And I remember, and I think back to the first time, you know, when I was a little kid, like just even like 3-4 years old, and my dad would be in the backyard with me throwing tennis balls to me, and we'd play catch. And my favorite thing to do is just playing catch with a tennis ball. And I was always good at catching a football. I could one hand it. I could make plays in a way where I was able to catch a football, and it was always, and I always had pretty good hand eye coordination. And it's funny that you mentioned tennis balls, because it's just like, that was the first thing we used to do for hours, you know, is just throwing a tennis ball around. And you can, and I can see, you know, cause a lot of kids learn to catch by catching a baseball and then they have the glove, but that's so different than, you know, just, you know, that's so different than when you transition from like catching a baseball than you do a football, you know, because of the very fact that you mentioned.
Yeah. And I think it's something that's really not coached enough. Like, it was something that really was brought to my attention when I was at Rutgers. And it's something that they just preached so much that I thought was so helpful, was just emphasizing your eyes. And there's so many drills you can do of, you know, catching a small, like seeing a smaller target, like I mentioned, or distraction drills. Another one of my favorite drills is what I call the lying down ball drill, where guys will lie down on the ground, you kind of walk around them in circles, you know, throwing the ball at different angles. And I think all that stuff, all those nuances need to be practiced quite a bit.
What would you, if you were scouting wide receivers' ability to catch the ball, say you were at an all-star game, what kind of drill or practice would you do to see whether or not they track the ball well? What are some drills you do?
So there's a cone drill I do where you kind of set up like an arrow. So you have two cones 7 yards apart, and then, you know, and two more cones on the side at like an angle of like 4 or 5 yards at an angle, and you make them come in and out of their break and whip their head and eyes around. And as soon as they come out of their break, the ball should be on them. And I think that's the biggest tell. Like, it's something I do at recruiting camps when I was coaching in college, trying to tell, you know, the difference between a DB and a receiver. Like, is this kid a natural receiver? And if you can whip your head and eyes around out of a break and then track the ball right away, I think that's just like instinctual. It's something that's, you know, when you get to the higher levels, you don't necessarily have time to train someone's eyes. Like, if you're drafting a wide receiver anywhere in the draft, you're not really interested right. in training a kid who has bad eyes, you know. It's easy to have good eyes and focus on the football when you're when you're, you know, stationary, but I think getting these guys on the move, throwing them the balls at different angles, and then forcing them to react instinctually and just really looking at their eye discipline. I think it's something that as a coach or a scout, you have to see. It's not about where their hands are. I think having strong hands and seeing how well they can kind of lock the ball down and how well they can, you know, really, really go grab it is important, but it's really just seeing it. Do they track their eyes? Are they conscious of seeing the ball all the way through? Do they do those little things like keep the ball out in front? And all those things I think are important.
Okay, good. So, I mean, it's interesting because I see oftentimes at the Senior Bowl, they'll set up a drill. A lot of the NFL coaches will set up a drill where it's like the cones are in a rectangle, and they'll be running, like they'll be throwing the balls at each turn in the rectangle and having mm-hmm. them catch it.
Exactly. And continue yeah, exactly. Turn.
So that's that purpose. Okay.
And I think the gauntlet drill they do, where like you remember the famous video from this year where the kid got hit in the head. but I think that's a great drill as well, because you're on the move running full speed and you got balls, you know, coming at you in front. And I just think it shows how trained you are at keeping the ball out front, catching the ball on the move. And those are all things that you know, one of the hardest things to do is catch the ball on the move, especially now when you add in defenders draped on your back, or, you know, a quarterback fitting it through a window with a linebacker in front of you. And that all starts with eye discipline and then grip strength and things of that nature.
And let's talk a little bit more about that grip strength, because, you know, it's not just how strong the hands are. I would think it's also, you know, grip strength has a lot to do with your forearm strength. So that comes into play when you're reaching out, say, to catch a crossing route with someone draped over you and slapping at your forearms or pulling at your forearms. I could see how that also affects your grip one way or the other. So, also you hear about a guy like Antonio Brown and Michael Irvin, who had unbelievable grip strength in terms of what they were able to do. So, you know, why is that important, that grip strength important for, like, you know, is it important for high velocity balls? Is it important for the fact that defenders are, you know, on you and you have to kind of be able to maintain, you know, position to catch that ball, or being able to squeeze that ball even when defenders are pulling at you? Is there something to do with that?
I think it's both. I think that grip strength is important. I think when you see a guy who like can pluck the ball out of the air and you just see the ball kind of stop as soon as it meets his hands, that's forearm strength, upper body strength, grip strength. I think that's important for being able to stop the ball in the air and have aggressive hands. I think people who have not played in the NFL underestimate how hard NFL quarterbacks really throw the ball. Like, that thing is coming at you at a million miles an hour. Plus you're on the move. Plus you should be finishing at a negative angle, running back to the ball. Like, it's not easy. And it's why you see so many, it's a terrible habit, but guys somehow get away with it. Like, even a guy like Antonio Brown, you see them catch the ball with their body all the time.
Right.
And I think people underestimate how fast the ball is really coming at you when you're in and out of a break trying to shake a defender. It's easier said than done, but that grip strength, I think, is really, really important to attack the ball, stop the ball in the air. And then, like you said, like you might have a defender on your back. Like, a drill I do all the time, just like a regular catching drill, is I'll have one kid just standing there right in front of me from 7 yards away, and there'll be, you know, two of the other receivers right behind him. And as soon as I throw the ball, they're hitting his arm down and trying to hit the ball, but trying to get his hands to separate from the ball once he catches it. And I think it's a good drill. So I think like all grip strength, upper body strength, as far as catching a football, is important for all that, for stopping the ball in the air, having strong hands, but also for being able to catch the ball in traffic. And I think a lot of that too, it builds confidence. Like, a big thing that I think a big reason drops happen in football, in my opinion, is lack of focus, lack of confidence. Like, I think it's why it's so important in practice to have a pretty brutal punishment for guys when they drop the football. No one means to drop the ball, but at all. And I don't really get mad at kids when they drop the ball, because, you know, it's a physical mistake that I don't think anyone's doing on purpose. And it's why I think punishing receivers for drops in practice is so important. Not because I'm like so mad at the kid for dropping a ball. Like, no one means to drop a football by any means. But I think that it's important because you need to train the mindset that there is consequences for dropping a ball, and your brain does work in a way where you have more urgency, you have more focus in that moment, knowing that, you know, you're kind of trained that something bad will happen to you if you drop a ball, whether it's, you know, you have to do, I've seen people make their players do bear crawls in high school for dropping a ball. For me, it's always been, you know, push-ups. But something's got to be trained where it's got to click, and your brain, you know, kind of creates a sense of urgency when the ball's in the air to have a little bit extra focus. You're talking to yourself about being focused, and you're not, I think you don't ever want to think about dropping a football. You just want to think about making the play. And when you start to think about, you know, what's going to happen if I drop it, because you're not confident in your hands, that becomes a big issue where you'll see guys who have problems with drops. It's all mental. It has nothing to do with their physical inability to catch a ball. It's that there's some sort of mental block that is breaking down their focus in those moments. And I think that's one of the biggest thing that hand strength and upper body strength gives you is confidence in your hands, where it's not something you ever have to think about. You're just attacking the football fearlessly.
Let's talk a little bit more about that hand position, because you know, I've always described it as active versus passive, and you kind of alluded to that, you know, where, you know, on balls, you know, at a certain range of height relative to your body, you want to have your hands out and your fingertips up, and often people talk about that diamond position. So I was wondering if you could describe about the diamond position and also the position you catch when the ball is at waist level and below, how you do that and how that looks.
Yeah. So a big thing, when the ball is, you know, at your waist or below your chest waist or above, chest or above area, you want to do what I call is shoot the diamond. And that's with your pointer finger and your thumbs together, forming a diamond. So your hands are together. And like I said, it's out in front of your face. So you can kind of frame the ball and see the ball, you know, with your eyes first. But a big part of that I think goes undercoached quite a bit is keeping your elbows tucked. And a big mistake receivers make is when they go to shoot the diamond, they have their elbows out wide, so that now when your elbows are wide and the ball hits your hand, they're going to naturally separate. And that's how you see a lot of drops as well. But if your elbows are in tight, you know, it's harder for them to separate, and you have kind of more strength and more give behind the ball, where you can keep those hands firm. So shooting the diamond, you know, and kind of seeing a picture through, seeing the picture frame, you know, through your hands are important. And then when it's below your waist, you want to basket catch it with your pinkies together. And these are fundamentals that you'll hear in peewee football, and they never become outdated. Even in the NFL, they need to be coached. Right. In D1 college football, they need to be coached. But shooting the diamond with your elbows in tight and then having your pinkies together below your waist. But the big thing with both of those positions is being aggressive. People tend to be a little more lackadaisical with low balls and not be as aggressive, where you still have to try and pluck the ball out of the air and keep the ball up front and attach your eyes to it. And really a big thing with low balls is you want to bend at your knees and not like bend over at your waist with straight legs, which a lot of people try to do. You want to bend down and get the ball and attack the ball. And if that means you end up falling over to secure the catch, then so be it. But being aggressive, keeping the ball up front, and just literally the mechanics of keeping your hands together is something that I think you have to train over and over. That's never going to be something you're thinking about during a game. It's never going to be something that you know, you're conscious of shoot the diamond during a game. It's got to become second nature because you've caught a million balls, you know, leading up to that moment.
I like how you talked about the importance of the elbows being tight. Should they be locked, or should they still be kind of loose? You know, there should
you
be
want them to be loose. You want to shoot the diamond out front and then have some give to it, because you don't want to have like if you just have rock solid locked elbows, you know, that's going to be pretty hard to catch the ball with. And that's, you know, you're going to drop the ball like a rock, but you should have some give to it and have some kind of buoyancy where you catch the ball. There's a little bit of give, but not so much give that, again, you're letting the ball get into your body. You know, you're being firm, you're being aggressive, but that's part of having soft hands, is kind of having those soft elbows and having some give to the ball as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those situations where, like, I could see how that, say, if the ball is over your, is, you know, at that, say, forehead or slightly above your helmet level, if your elbows are so wide that your hands, elbows, and head are forming a diamond, that's probably too much. But at the same point, if you have a little bit of bend in the elbow, kind of like getting into an athletic position as a boxer, you know, you kind of, your elbows need to kind of have the bend that your knees would. In kind of a slight crouch.
I think that boxing actually has a lot of parallels to playing wide receiver, from your like positioning and your body control, but also like unrelated note, but your hand combat. I always talk about hand combat at the line of scrimmage is everything like a boxer, where you never see a boxer, you know, throwing a punch with his arms out extended. It always comes from a place in tight, and then he shoots it from kind of tight body position. It's no different than catching a football, where your hands are going to start tight, you're in a running motion, and you're shooting it very efficiently out front in kind of like a violent movement. And I think there's a lot of similarities between boxing and a lot of football. Like a lot of people throwing a right hook, the body mechanics of throwing a right hook is very similar to throwing a football. I think there's a lot that you can take from boxing that translates to the game of football.
It's so funny because I've had this conversation with so many football players or football people, and we all geek out over watching boxing. A lot of the people, or just see the parallels, whether it's pass rushing, receiving, you know, footwork, you know, throwing, it's, you know, the hand work for sure. It's something else. Are there any situations where it is advisable to coach a receiver to trap the football against his body?
No, I don't ever coach it, but I also don't kill kids for it if they make the catch. Like, I just think that, like I said, it's harder than it looks to catch a ball coming at you a million miles an hour while you're coming out of a break. And sometimes you just don't get your head and eyes around fast enough. Sometimes, you know, the ball's on you earlier than expected, and you just have to react and be an athlete and catch the ball. So I don't ever really coach trapping the ball with your body, but you know, it's something where, you know, I'll get on the guys. I'll say, you know, you got to get your hands out front, flip your hands. Like, that's not mechanically sound, but if you make the catch, you make the catch. That's what you get paid to do. And there's plenty of NFL receivers who will catch the ball with their hands the wrong way or trap the ball with their body and make millions of dollars doing it. So I think it's something where, you know, your number one job is to make sure you secure the catch. But it's not something like the only time I want guys to flip their hands and not be aggressive and catch it out front is when it's an over the shoulder catch and like a deep ball. And that's when obviously you have to, when the ball's down the field. And that's why those are the hardest balls to catch. Cause you mechanically, you have to let the ball cross your eyes. You have to let the ball cross your eyes. You know, when you're catching a deep ball, and that's why they're so hard to catch and need to be trained over and over. But as far as like intermediate routes and you're coming back to the ball, there's never a time where I want them to necessarily trap the ball at their body. But again, it's something I won't, as long as you're making the catch and you can be consistent doing it. If your head's not around fast enough or whatever, it's not something I'm going to kill kids on.
Gotcha. Anything else that you would coach about over the head throws?
So a big thing, again, starting with your eyes, is if you're running a go ball 40 yards downfield, a big mistake that young receivers make is when they show their eyes. So most people coach, if it's a fade route, you know, you take your release, you run and you keep your head down for 10 yards. If that's a fade, which is generally a three-step route. If you're catching a go ball or a vertical, a takeoff, whatever you call it, and it's a five-step route, you generally want to keep your head down for 15 yards. Now, once you show your eyes, a lot of people make the mistake of looking back at the quarterback, but if the quarterback's on time, the ball should already be in the air. So if you look back at the quarterback, now you're not looking to where the ball is. So I think the biggest thing that starts, that's hard for young receivers to understand, is you need to coach the ball. You need to see the ball in the air first. So you're running downfield, and then you need to look immediately in the sky, expecting the ball to be in the air already, and find the ball in the air first, and then track it all the way through. I think, you know, it's really hard to be running full speed 45 yards downfield to see the ball in the air and then track it all the way in your hands. Because if you have any sort of slip up with your eyes where you're not focused on the ball, it's the hardest ball to catch over the shoulder. Because like I said, from that moment, from when it's above your head to meeting your hands, your eyes have to move quite a bit to track the ball in. So I think your eyes are really the most important, and catching deep balls over and over is something that needs to be practiced quite a bit. And from different angles, from awkward angles, there's drills we do where, you know, you might be on your knees and you're throwing the ball over their head and they kind of have to dive for it on the ground, just throwing deep balls over and over where quarterbacks are putting in different places. But anytime you're catching a deep ball and the ball is not like over your head, we got to sprint to go get it. Anytime you can kind of jump back and turn and flip your body and adjust your body in the air to catch it out front, I would prefer that people do that.
Interesting. So what about, what was I going to ask you about? You talked about the eyes coming off of those deeper routes. When you say the head down, are the eyes still focused on like downfield at the defender when you're talking about head down, or is the head down and the eyes are looking at the turf? What do you
Not necessarily at the turf. What I mean by head down is all you're focused on is running past the defender. So like, okay, if it's press coverage, you're working your release and then your head is down, you know, working on beating him vertically with speed. You're not, because you're naturally, another thing that you got to coach a lot is naturally when you turn and look for the ball, kids tend to slow down. And they're not running as fast. And I think that's something like running through your eyes is something I say a lot, running through your head turn it's something you got to work on. You got to be conscious of literally you could be in the backyard by yourself without a football and go run a go route and focus on feeling yourself accelerate as you look for the football.
Yeah, because it's not natural to run, to turn one way and still be running really fast and not looking exactly where you're going.
Exactly. It's not natural at all. So that's something you got to work on a lot to make sure that you're maintaining speed throughout your route. That if you take a great release and you beat the guy at the line of scrimmage, well, you don't want to let him catch up to you because you're slowing down when you're looking for the football. And one of my receivers I coach now at Don Bosco, he's a great player. He has a terrible habit of every time he runs a deep ball and he shows his eyes, he naturally slows down. And it's something I try to work with him on every day. But that's similar to what we were saying before. Like that's not something that's natural. And it's something that I think you do need to talk to yourself about in game is you know, accelerating through your eyes and making sure you don't slow down. But when your head is down on a go ball, it's not necessarily staring at the turf. It's just making sure that you're focused on nothing else but accelerating past the DB and using your speed to win on the route. Once you get to your landmark, to your look point, whether it's 10 yards, 15 yards, you should be finding the ball in the air, not out of the quarterback's hands, because the ball should be on its way already.
That makes perfect sense. So yeah. One of the other things that's certainly not natural is catching a football when someone's hitting you. So, yeah. You know, what are some tips that you give to receivers? Are there any tips at all about, you know, going over the middle, catching a ball and knowing you're going to get hit in the legs or in the back or in the chest, or you see the hit coming, you know, like a guy like Julio Jones, I notice staying on him is when I look at two receivers who I really like a lot, obviously we all love Julio Jones's game, and AJ Green. And and I'm a huge AJ Green fan. And, you know, the difference between those two guys, I always thought when catching the ball is that Julio Jones, if the ball's coming, if the defender's coming at him from behind and he's going to get hit in the back, or even if he knows he's going to get hit, likely going to get hit in the back, just based on where the defender is as he's about to make his break, he's going to catch that ball.
Yes.
If the defender's in his sight line, he drops a lot of balls, and that's a hard thing to do. Whereas AJ Green, the reason that I've always maintained that I, you know, personally, when I've scouted players, that I liked AJ Green just a little bit more is that AJ Green could have, you know, a Mack truck coming at him, and most likely his gravestone would say he caught the ball.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about catching the ball after, you know, with imminent contact.
Yeah, I think catching the ball across the middle takes a certain type of person. Like you need to be fearless. And that it's very interesting to see how you'll see a guy in college who's fearless coming across the middle. Now all of a sudden he's got $50 million attached to his body and he becomes a little less fearless in the NFL, which makes sense. Like,
yes.
You know, I get it. Like it's hard to fault a guy who's going to protect his investment and isn't going to put himself in harm's way as much and sell out when he has that type of price tag attached to himself and his talent. But I think first of all, it's got to be something where you're not thinking about it. Like if you're at all hesitant in the game of football, you will get beat every single time. Like any sort of hesitation, any sort of lack of aggressiveness will get you beat. So it's got to be something where you are fearless in catching the ball. But I think it just comes from all those drills. It comes from knowing that you have grip strength, knowing that you're, you know, physical enough to take a hit. And I don't know that there's much you can do to train that other than, you know, doing drills like I mentioned before, where you've got someone draped on your back catching a ball and it kind of is a familiar feeling of catching the ball in traffic and you're not just always running routes on air where there's no one around you. Like you need to practice catching the ball in traffic, practice catching the ball with people on your back. You can do that in a variety of ways where, you know, a lot of times when we're throwing routes on air in practice, I'll stand right at the break point and just hit the crap out of my guys as they're catching the ball just to get them used to that feeling. But I think like anything else, it just comes from putting yourself out there and doing it over and over. But the confidence in your hands, the confidence in your eyes, like eye discipline across the middle is where it's really tested the most. Obviously, when you beat a guy clean and there's no one around you, it's much easier to have eye discipline. But it's much harder now to have eye discipline when there's linebackers around you, when you're about to take a hit. And I think that just comes from doing the ball drills over and over. You know, working on your upper body strength and being able to maintain discipline. But I think the best guys across the middle, quite frankly, are fearless. And I don't know that there's a way to coach fearlessness. I think that's why a guy like Steve Smith, who we talked about in the last podcast we did together, a guy like Steve Smith is such a great player because he's just a dog. He was fearless and there was no one who was going to outcompete him in those moments.
No, not at all. I mean, and the best way to get respect of a defender is to be able to take a hit and come down with the ball. I mean,
that's a huge boost to your team too. Like when you get smacked, like you're going to get smacked while you catch a ball. You're in a vulnerable position when you're going for the football, but when you pop back up, you know, that's a huge boost to your team and to your quarterback that he can trust you in those situations.
Yeah, my proudest moment ever as an amateur athlete is doing exactly that and getting flipped and catching the ball. And it was funny because the next day I was a musician, but I used to play against our football team, and I got hit by a linebacker doing that when we were just playing, probably in a way that we probably shouldn't have been, but it was a long time ago. But I remember the next day, you know, walking through the locker room on the way to another classroom, and you know, it was kind of funny because it was like I didn't even play, and you get the respect of people just for something like that, and you can see that on the field with the way that people you know, treat that. And I'm just wondering, yeah, are there ways you coach people to protect themselves on any level while catching the ball? Are there any things?
Yes.
That note?
Yes. Like when you catch the ball across the middle, like let's say, you know, like a lot of times you catch like a spot route over the ball or anything over the middle, like you have to be smart about when you see guys incoming, you want to, first of all, catch and pierce, or catch and puncture is a big thing where you catch the ball and you immediately stick your foot in the ground and you're going north right away. You're not trying to go side to side because, you know, if you catch like a slant route and you're on the outside and you keep trying to run across the middle to beat that immediate defender, that's when you got all those big uglies inside who are trying to take your head off. But so you want to stay, you know, around the perimeter and get north right away. And that might mean that you only get 2 or 3 extra yards and it's not a home run play, but that's fine. Like not every play is going to be a touchdown. But also just understanding when to get down after you catch the ball. You'll see in the NFL, there's a lot of guys who have, like, talk about protecting their investment. Like Odell Beckham is great at catching the ball and getting down right away because he's not interested in catching the ball and fighting for an extra 6 yards with the expense of someone coming at his head or coming at his knees. So just being able to catch the ball and understand the positioning of defenders when you see guys kind of converging on you, just get down and take what you can get. And like I said, not every route is meant to, you know, be a huge play or be a touchdown play. Like you'll see a lot of these high school highlights on Instagram and Twitter, yeah, and all this of guys making all these spin moves. Like that doesn't happen in real football when, yeah, everybody's fast and everyone's athletic. So, you know, a lot of times you have to understand when you're across the middle how to catch the ball and fall down right away and protect yourself. And I think it's something that you can practice in routes on air. You can talk about a lot, but it's another thing that is conscious. And I think the only way that a kid gets, or a receiver in general, gets used to catching the ball and falling down and protecting themselves is if their coach is doing a good job preaching that and coaching that on film and getting on them when they're not doing that. And you know, human instinct is to protect yourself, but it's something where if you're in a competitive situation and you're a competitor, you want to get every yard you can, but there's a fine line between being overly competitive and being stupid when guys are trying to take your head off. You got to protect yourself and just live to fight another down.
Yeah, Torrey Holt was really great at that. And then in, yes, contrast, a guy like Marquise Lee, I always kind of saw that Marquise Lee would lose, you know, which would end up losing 5 to 7 yards trying to gain an extra, you know, 5 to 10
yards. Fast guys tend to do that. Yeah. Guys tend to think that they're, you'll see a lot of guys in college who are speed players. And when they get to the NFL, or guys in high school who are speed players, they get to college, now are trying to dance around when they catch the ball. And, yeah, all of a sudden you're at a level where everybody's fast and everyone's athletic and you can't just win with speed. That you just got to, it's part of the art of playing receivers is learning when to use your speed. A lot of times your speed can be effective when you're on the outside and you're one-on-one against a corner, but when you're inside and there's 8 guys converging on you, it's a lot of times better just to get down. And another big thing with all that is getting the ball tucked right away. An expression, yeah, I use all the time is tuck before two, meaning you want to catch the ball and get it tucked before you take 2 steps, because that's a big thing where you catch the ball across the middle, you know, good defenders are going to come and try and strip the ball and create turnovers, and you need to get the ball tucked and protect the football first and foremost, and then, you know, protect your own body as well.
What about routes like this? And like, I've noticed, you know, there were 2 routes that were fun to watch in the Cleveland Browns, Pittsburgh Steelers game last week. And they were both fade routes to the right pylon where, they were back shoulder fades. And one was with Denzel Ward on Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
And Ward had his hand, you know, in Antonio Brown's chest. And I was actually just highlighting a play like that in on my site where I had Andrew Sandejo punching a ball free in the end zone of Jamison Crowder last year, where I noted how he went upward and punched upward towards basically the face mask through the face, like from, yeah, up through the chest, so that he was getting the coverage he needed and prevented the retraction, so that his forearm and elbow was like in the catch area and the receiver had to kind of catch the ball around the arm of the defender. And so then when you watch Antonio Brown against Ward did that technique, but Brown was able to extend around it. And then Josh Gordon did it also on, I don't remember the name, but he's the Tennessee rookie from Tennessee. Yeah. And he was able to do a similar thing, and they extend that ball outward. So, I mean, there's certain catches, obviously, you know, how do you coach around things like that where defenders are trained one way, which is, it looks obvious to me that they're like, get your arm in his chest area and your hand in his face. Yeah, yeah. And that blocks out his catch range in terms of, or it makes it problematic. How do you counter that?
So I don't know that either one of those, like, I don't know how Antonio Brown caught that ball, first of all, because I thought Denzel Ward had perfect coverage. And it's just somehow Antonio Brown ends up coming up with those balls all the time. And it's part of what makes him great. But a big thing that probably the most important coaching point as far as combat catches, what I call combat catches, 50-50 balls, is what I call the pullback. So you want to attack the ball aggressively, and then you want to pull it back away from the defender's body. And when you're in midair, you want to pull the ball away and try to give the defender your back. So just like kind of we were talking about boxing out and getting position, is you're in midair and you want to grab the ball and take the nearest path to turning your shoulders, turning your body, so that you are torquing your back towards the defender so he has to play through your body to get to the football. And that's the number one thing that will help you come down with those 50-50 balls. It's the number one thing that helps you catch more balls in traffic. And it's something that you have to train over and over. And that does become instinctual, that, you know, you'll see guys who don't quite execute the pullback fully and they don't quite get their body all the way turned, but it's second nature for them to rip the ball away that way. And just that extra nudge and that extra pull will help them secure the catch. Whereas if you don't, if pullback isn't a second nature technique for you, you end up just catching the ball and kind of just coming down with it through the defender's body. And that's how he can punch it out through your face mask. So I think the pullback is a big thing, where you catch the ball aggressively, high point the ball, and then torque your body in midair to turn and give him your back so you're protecting the ball with your body. And if he has to play through your body to get to the football, a lot of times he's obviously not going to be able to get there, or he's got to run through you where you can draw a flag and things like that.
Nice. So let's end this with just something kind of a little fun. As I listen to you talk about all these different techniques, there's a player that I always have loved that I think is, I thought he was an artist at the wide receiver position, but I think off field and maybe, you know, off field, he probably had some things that were going on that didn't allow him to consistently stay with teams year after year in the NFL. But I thought Brandon Lloyd was one of the most fantastic pass catchers and a pretty darn good route runner. I thought he was one of the more underrated receivers in terms of like, if you're going to put up a highlight reel and say, these are the greatest catches that of difficulty that you will see, I would think that Brandon Lloyd would have a healthy percentage of them. And there'd be a lot of people going, who is that guy? Right, so if you want to comment on him, that'd be great. But also, are there other players that you think about that maybe fans, you know, either who are young fans or fans hadn't really thought of that you're like, these are guys that you'd want to watch. And if you want to learn about,
sorry, say that again. You cut out.
I'm sorry. I'd love to see. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Hello. It looks like you passed. Okay. That didn't work out very well.
You.
Hello. Hello. Hey, we're back, I think. You there?
Yep.
I think our VOI, their RIP went off. So just to repeat, you know, in addition, you know, Brandon Lloyd obviously is a player that I thought is underappreciated in terms of, if you're just looking at, you know, the skills that he displayed on the field. I'd love for you to comment on Lloyd if you like, as well as bring up any player or players that maybe fans may not appreciate because they weren't like highly productive guys, but you see them as, you know, kind of artists or master craftsmen at certain aspects of catching the football or running routes.
Yeah. I think one guy that comes to mind right now, is Mohamed Sanu with the Falcons, who's a guy who I know pretty well, but I just think that has unbelievable hands and does an unbelievable job of just out competing people for the football. And I just think that when the ball's in the air, it's underestimated how much like your mindset comes into play, where like, it's no different than when you see undersized guys in basketball who average 12 rebounds a game. And, you know, they're out rebounding 7-footers and they're 6'9", is that they just have a tenacity to them and an intensity and a will to go get the ball. And I think there's something to be said for that, that can't really be coached. And a guy like Brandon Lloyd, to me, is very similar, where he wasn't the fastest guy, wasn't the biggest guy, but he competed his balls off and just found a way to, you know, he was very technical, had very good skills as far as his route running technique. And that, like, people confuse, like, I'll make videos sometimes on Twitter, Instagram, and talk about the technique of someone, and you know, people who are kind of ignorant will respond, no, that's just quickness, that's just pure athleticism. And it's like, right. It's not. Like, everybody in the NFL has pure athleticism. No one's interested in drafting bad athletes. But, you know, what makes up for a Jerry Rice, who's the best receiver of all time and ran a 4.7, you know, he understood how to attack leverages, how to use quickness and change of speed. That, like, change of speed is truly the art of playing wide receiver to me, because if you understand how to change speeds, if you run a 4.9 40 and you come out at 80%, well, now you're, and then you burst to 100%, your 4.9 to the DB all of a sudden feels like a 4.6, you know, yes. Or it feels like a 4.5. And I think there's things like that, just understanding your craft. But as far as catching, I don't think there's anything that can replace just being competitive when the ball's in the air. And just having a tenacity to you of, you're not going to outcompete me for this football. I want it more than you do. I'm going to jump through you to get the ball. I'm going to, you know, be nasty about going to catch the football and be aggressive at all times. And yeah, I talk about him a lot, but I just love his game so much, is Steve Smith. Like, that's the biggest thing that made that guy great, was he was just a dog when the ball was in the air. But it's something that you see, like Mohamed Sanu. I have so much respect for his game, because he's not the biggest, he's not the fastest, but he is a craftsman with his routes. He's a craftsman in the way he catches the ball and the way he attacks the ball. And from a fundamental standpoint, does everything, you know, almost near perfectly. And that's why he's been able to have such a successful long career in the NFL, in my opinion.
No, that's a great take with a guy. And it's funny because, yeah, you're talking to another guy in the Steve Smith fan club for sure. Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a receiver that I have more respect for in terms of just watching their game. And one of my absolute favorites of all time, a few years ago, I did a fun little series where I kind of said that the classic B flick Independence Day, if aliens came to invade the planet and they decided that for some odd reason in their culture that they played football just like we do, and that they said, here, we're going to make a deal with you. We're going to challenge you to a football game for the planet. And we have the technology to basically resurrect or reinvigorate any player that you want from your history to be a part of that team. Who would you assemble your team to be the team to defend your planet? You know, and Steve Smith certainly was he and Jerry Rice and Randy Moss and Hines Ward were kind of my quartet of players to defend the planet. So
just Hines Ward is another great example of a guy who didn't have top end athleticism or, you know, wouldn't stand out at a combine, but is just, you know, was an unbelievable craftsman and an unbelievable competitor.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that in mind, I mean, and the other thing that you did mention before we go that I thought was interesting was that whole, again, reemphasizing that change of pace, you know, using pacing, because a good example of that this weekend was Keenan Allen. I highlighted that also on the site, where he was, he ran his touchdown was, you know, I was talking about how he was using motion is a part of the route, you know, yeah. I mean, and he jogged across, and his first couple of steps were the same pace as the pace that he set with jogging. And as a result of that, instead of him going really fast, he was going at, you know, like you said, probably, you know, 60-70% speed. And then he just burst out of that first couple of steps to get upfield, and the defender was just completely discombobulated.
Yeah, I think that the greatest phrase I've ever heard that kind of directly relates to change of speed that I got from PJ Fleck, who's, we talked about last time, he's the head coach at Minnesota, was Mohamed Sanu's receivers coach at Rutgers, and has an incredible legacy of coaching receivers. But he always talks about being patient but sudden. And I think that's change of speed in a nutshell, where you're patient as far as executing your plan. You're not in such a rush to get into your route. But then once you realize that you've set the DB up, or you've, you know, kind of set the route up, then you're sudden in making your move. And all of a sudden, you know, you're running at 80% and you burst to 100% suddenly, and your 4.8 feels like a 4.4. or, you know, you're jogging and your pace on the motion gets the DB kind of in a slow mindset because he's jogging with you to match your pace in the motion. And now because of that, you know, he's a yard behind you when the ball snapped. Well, now he's got inside leverage that you can attack, or his momentum's going outside. So you can stretch him outside, you know, get him to keep running, you know, with that momentum outside and then snap it back in patiently or suddenly, sorry. But, you know, just understanding, and it varies for every route. Like there's some routes where you can't be patient and you just have to run a million miles an hour all the time, you know, because if you're running a 16 yard dig, there's not a lot of time to be patient because that's a long developing route that's got to time up with the quarterback's footwork. Like you got to get in and out of that thing. But anything underneath in the 5 to 8 yard area is really a time to be patient but sudden.
That was great, Drew. And this podcast has just been fantastic. So on behalf of Drew Lieberman and myself, thank you for listening to this episode of the RSP Cast. You can find more RSP Casts on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher, and Google Play at Matt Waldman's RSP Cast. And of course, if you aren't a subscriber to the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, I highly recommend that you check it out at mattwaldmanrsp.com. It has a pre-draft and post-draft edition. You pay one price and you get both. One's out every April 1st and the other is out within a week of the NFL draft. It is a great resource for fantasy football players as well as draft nicks. You know, considering the feedback that I've gotten from, you know, from scouts, from people who consult with the league, as well as from fantasy players everywhere, it's that type of document and publication that bridges both fantasy and reality extremely well so that it doesn't shirk on the quality of analysis that you're going to get on evaluating players. But at the same time, it does give a nice perspective separated out too for fantasy players to understand how that they can take this analysis and get really great value with their picks. So please check it out. Remember, 10% of every sale has been going to Darkness to Light since I believe around 2011, 2012. And it's a charitable organization that has been doing great work in the community to prevent sexual abuse of children and also to help train adults and not only how to prevent this in their communities, in schools, in, you know, in any type of municipal area, but, and at home, but also in ways to address it when unfortunately it may occur so that we don't have the type of fallout that we've seen with Michigan State or with Penn State or in government or in other areas of life. So, you know, it's a great organization and we've been donating 10% and been able to help them train hundreds, if not thousands of people at this point, you know, because of your contribution and your enjoyment of football by getting the RSP. So thanks again. Have a good weekend and look forward to getting our next guest on here next week. Thanks again.